Hey, everybody, it's Brian Croft, and we are back, the Dealership Fix It podcast, back from hiatus. Well, you know, probably like a lot of things with all the COVID stuff. And I've had a career change. We can talk about that in another separate episode. But as you may or may not know, I am doing this podcast again, even though this isn't the business I work in anymore. So I've had a lot of friends in the business say they miss the podcast. And, you know, with a whole lot of experience in this realm, I think it's fair enough. I don't make money off the podcast, but I'm glad to come back and do the podcast and get great guests on, which leads me directly right in. This is episode number 69. And today I've got a friend on calling in from, I think, San Francisco area. Michael
Masuras. That's right.
Michael Masuras calling from the San Francisco area, the Bay. Michael and I will chat with you. I would tell you guys, dealership folk, get your notepads out. I know you can save the podcast and refer back to it, but Michael has a whole lot of experience. And if you can imagine working in the world of tech, things like Google and the like, anything that will help you definitely be visible online, those are things we're going to talk about today. Michael, thanks for jumping on the podcast with me.
Thank you very much for having me, Brian. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know. I think probably today I would say I don't know who knows you out there in the dealership world, my audience, the guys I speak to on this show, but I would say let's pretend like they don't know who you are. So if you would, if you don't mind, share a little bit about yourself, you know, kind of where you come from. You're in sort of the motorcycle world now. I know you're a rider. Share some of that story with us so we can get some perspective before we delve into the sort of the action items and that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Yeah. So originally, as you said, I live in the Bay Area now in San Francisco for the last 15 years or even more. Originally, I'm from Greece. So I'm a kind of a transplant here. I kind of studied in Europe, mostly computer science stuff. And then I landed where all people who study computer science land. It's Silicon Valley. So the past 20 years, I've been working in the tech industry. That's my background. Worked in many small and large companies here in the Bay, and as recently as like three, four years ago. So I've had a lot of experience, you know, riding this tech wave in the last 20 years, and learned a lot of things, built a lot of things online and on the internet always. And then about around 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, I would say, I was working at Google. That was my last employment of record, and it was a great place to work. I mean, my colleagues were fantastically smart, and I was working on products that would be seen by billions of people. And my responsibility back then was to be an engineering manager on search, on Google search. So our team was responsible for crafting this Google Knowledge Graph, if you wish, which is like Google's database of everything. And so, you know, when you go to Google and you ask a question, you say like horror movies or, you know, where does LeBron James play? You get this little panel with information. Or if you say, you know, Harley's posters, for example, you get this little panel again with specs and stuff. So all of that was kind of our team. And but then after a while, I was kind of thinking, I learned all these great things and tech, but I'd really love to do something about something I'm passionate about. And what I was passionate about back then and still am was motorcycling, really, and riding. And so I left my my cozy Google job and salary, and I kind of dived into the power sports world and combined my talents or whatever talents I think I have in tech and power sports to kind of build online stuff for the power sports community and dealers and riders as well. Actually, it's interesting. You asked earlier, Brian, about my story with the motorcycles. I started very late in my life. It's kind of different to most people. I've never ridden a motorcycle really until I was like almost 30 years old. My dad was a doctor And his advice was to never ride a motorcycle. He was working at the hospital every night at the emergency room, and he's like, this is unbelievable. So, you know, the thing that remained with me is like, wear a helmet if you ever do that. But so anyway, around 30 years old, I was looking for something to commute to work, basically, just in the city. And I ended up at the kind of scooter dealership and hopped on a genuine body scooter. And I tell you, the first like 3 seconds I rode that thing, I knew I was done. And I zoomed out of there like a run out of hell, as they say. And 6 months later, I bought a little Monster, a Ducati Monster. I rode that around, and I've bought like 5 or 6 bikes since then. And I just love riding them. Much less now, I have to say. I have like 2 kids, and it's not as easy to get out there psychologically, but definitely, yeah, exactly. So so anyway, that's how that passion evolved. So I kind of married my tech passion and my riding passion to build something online with motorcycles.
Can I ask you a question? You know, obviously this is for dealerships, this podcast, and you know, obviously at some point you walked into a dealership in the Bay Area or whatever, and you said that the 125 scooter was like your first, you know, motorcycle purchase.
Yes.
Do you remember, or do you feel like saying the name of a dealership that you went into and who you interacted with? I'm not going to ask you to tell me about them or whatever. Give somebody a hard time, but.
Oh yeah. It's San Francisco Scooter Center down on 10th Street. Barry is the owner, and then we go there and talk occasionally. And San Francisco Scooter Center was that. And then I think my first bike, like a Maxwell, you know, manual motorcycle, was bought from Monroe Motors. I was in Valencia City in San Francisco.
Yep.
So, and
That's I've been to the scooter dealer, but I've been to Monroe, and I can tell you that what I remember about that is how cool the place was. I mean, probably like any other place that's in the Bay Area there, as far as a dealership, they got a lot of cool factor. But I remember going there as a rep and trying to park my car nearby to go to visit the dealer. And I'll tell you what, I never experienced anything as difficult. It's like, there's that movie clip where the, where they've got he's got the sort of the scooter or the golf cart going sideways in the hallway, and I'm ruining the analogy here, but amazing area for motorcycling, for scooter, so relevant. But yeah, it's neat, you know, and I get a little geeked out about, you know, somebody that wasn't familiar with or interacting with dealers to show up. You know, you overcame a big obstacle. A lot of people don't like to try something new like that. They don't move across into that from the barrier of I want to be a motorcyclist, or I want to be going out on a scooter. They don't get there. I think there's too much of a barrier to entry for people that are unknown. So congratulations on not being scared to go after that.
Yeah, exactly. And as you say, going to the dealership, it was always so much fun. I mean, we would just go to the dealership after we bought the bike too, because that's where all the people hang out, and all the eye candy is as well, right? So it doesn't matter if you bought a bike. 3 months later, you're back there, like, looking at everything again. So, it was great fun. And it still is.
If they're doing it right, you are, right? And, yeah, for sure.
That's right. Yeah.
So I don't know if you had more sort of to share on your story, that what brought you, obviously, from not into motorcycles all the way and back and around and on that technical end. What do you think, sort of to start it off, you know, what do you think that my dealership audience, what don't they know? What do they need to know? Can you give us a little bit of history just with your knowledge of Google? I'd love to tap into some of that.
Yeah, of course. I can. I think the most relevant thing here is to understand is that how search engines, Google is just an incarnation of Bing, Yahoo, wherever you go, DuckDuckGo. Wherever people go, how all these online platforms see, you know, your website, you being a dealership or any other website, and how they kind of rank it, right, and give it back to their users. And because that will help understand, you know, why things are, you know, happening in a certain way, why the dealership's sites rank where they rank, and also what can someone can do to improve that situation. And so the thing there is, right, the web, right, is an unbelievably huge place when Google or Yahoo, whoever goes out there to find web pages to send people to, you know, they find trillions of them, literally. And they find all the dealership websites, they find all the marketplaces, Craigslist, Facebook, you name it, everything out there. They kind of crawl all of it, as we say, scrape all of it, and then put it in a database. And then comes the even more difficult part, which is like someone goes on Google and says, all right, you know, Yamaha Tenere for sale or something like that. So now Google is faced with this task of ranking all these websites that it found, including your dealership website and also all the marketplaces. And in order to do that, it has to apply some rules, right? And I want to kind of highlight the most important things here, kind of coarsely. And this kind of the three most basic rules is, how good is your website, right? How fast it is, how clean it is, you have the right headings and stuff like that. These are kind of what we call insight or in-page characteristics. And then the second one, which is also crucial, is like how many people link to it. So that's important to understand, because that's a very major signal for search engines to understand how good your dealer website is compared to everything else. Otherwise, you know, it's as they say in the movie, it's just your opinion, right? It's like, yeah, that's a great website, but it's like almost when you write an academic paper, right, in university, it's like how many citations, how many references of other papers do you have? So when people talk about you, that's what tells the search engines you're popular. And so that tells them you're a good website. So that's a key thing to remember. And then the third one, I think also very important, and that's, the third one is quite a twister, is like search engines depend on their users to tell them what are the good websites. That sounds counterintuitive, right? Because you're like, well, that doesn't work this way, that's backwards. But that's actually not. You know, when Google answers that first query you ask that question, you know, Sportster, Harley Sportster, or whatever, Yamaha Tenere, they're like, they gave you some links. Well, depending on what you click on and what people click on, then they will rearrange them to meet what the users want. So that's another key insight here, right? Because that means that the more successful you are, the more successful you will continue to be. You kind of build up on that. So those are those three things, right? The quality of your site, how many people talk about you and link to you, and also, you know, what do people select after they search? That's kind of the things that instruct search engines how to rank your website compared to everything else. So if you think how, so that's okay, that's great. Okay, so sure, that happens. What does that mean though for someone has a dealership and has a website and they want to basically attract users online or on Google or Facebook or wherever? Well, if you think about it, there's an issue here. Like if people are looking for things online to buy, be that a motorcycle or a car or whatever, they usually tend to go to all these aggregators, right, the marketplaces. You usually go to Amazon to buy things or to eBay. And similarly, if you want to buy a car, you'll go to cars.com or CarGurus. And if you want to buy a motorcycle, well, you're probably going to go to Craigslist or Facebook or Cycle Trader, all, you know, the mega marketplaces, because that's what we want. People want breadth of inventory and availability, and they want a dedicated filtering and searching for what they're looking for, right? For motorcycles or for power sports, for ATVs, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So they tend to gravitate there naturally anyway, and that's where the problem, I think, is with a kind of an uphill battle with your websites, is that since that's where people go, that's where Google or Facebook will, or well, Facebook has its own marketplace, but that's where the search engines will send you to. That's like a major issue that you're facing, is that you're kind of facing an uphill battle, like that you kind of already in a disadvantage with, right? More people out there will link to or talk about Cycle Trader or Craigslist or Facebook than your individual dealership. So it's an orders of magnitude difference. And so that's a struggle that you have to face with, but it's not all lost. Like it's not that you can't have visibility. Especially a caveat to all this is local searches. So when people express online desire to search locally, then the search engines understand that. So what they understand is that your intent is to go to a physical shop. Otherwise, you wouldn't be entering your town name, right? So if you, it's a different thing to say Honda Trail 125, you know, for sale, a different thing to say, to try to search for Honda 125 Trail 125, ADS, whatever, for sale in Portland. That, now that's, you enter Portland, you mean, well, you're in Portland, you want a shop in Portland, and that's where now the physical shops fight back against the, you know, the Amazons and the cars of coal or the auto trade or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's where you got an increasing chance. And then we're going to tie back to that later on when we got, like, I want to give some advice of how to exploit that. So that's the kind of the lay of the land, and if you wish. And similarly, I mean, we talk about search engines, but the same happens online with you know, social networks like Facebook or Reddit or forums where people go to ask these questions. Like I see all the time on Reddit, how do I buy a new motorcycle? You know, and people were like, well, go to Facebook or Craigslist or Cycle Trader, and they give the same answers again and again. So it's really rare, right? You see, you're like, oh, go to down to Scuderia in San Francisco to buy a bike. You know, then you never really get that much. So all this signal, as we call it, comes into all these search engines and all these crawlers. So they know that. So unfortunately, naturally, they end up promoting those aggregators and above everything else.
I was just gonna say, which, you know, like for where I had worked in the past for Cycle Trader, you know, is a feather in the cap of them, right? Being the big aggregator, as you had said, you know, I would be able to interact with dealers and from the perspective of that company, right? It's a wonderful thing. Look at how everybody will see us. Everybody comes to us. But from the dealer perspective, the dealers would also say to me, well, yeah, that's great. And you work for them and good for you. But, and they know there's a benefit to being, you know, in some of those links that are connected into that URL that's shown on the search results. But they would also say, yeah, but then someone's going there and maybe they don't come back to me. Maybe they go and they look at different motorcycles. And that was kind of the gamble you took, right? That's kind of, you want the visibility, you want to be in the marketplace that everybody's there. And like you had said, you and I and all of us as consumers, we don't want to go and visit 300 different websites. We want to go to one, if at all possible, that will give us the lay of the land. Let us get the, you know, what's going on as an overview.
Exactly. And that's exactly 100% correct. And it's the older story, Brian. I mean, it's not, we're talking about the online world and aggregators, and we think this is something new. We're like, oh, that came with Amazon and all that. But, you know, as I said, I come from Greece. 2,500 years ago, we had markets. And all the shops were in the market. Mm-hmm. Then we had, you know, modern commerce, we have malls. People go to malls and all the shops are in the mall. And that's the same thing. It's a marketplace that attracts retailers, basically, in their facility. And so the same with the online, it's the same story repeated. Google wants to be, obviously, the biggest one of them all. And to the dark secret here, actually, it's not a dark secret, I mean, exaggeration, but Google itself doesn't like that either. They don't want Facebook and Craigslist and Forever Auto Trader to be on the way. They want dealers to be there, and like basically the end producers of content or products, retailers, and they want to be Google themselves to be the only marketplace. So, I mean, that's what I remember when our company was bought by them. That was the idea, to make all of search in Google, for example, parameterized in the same way you go to Amazon and you put your filters there and your price filters and everything, like to make everything work like that. So in a sense, they also don't like that. So they will always give, you know, they will promote your site as a dealer, your individual content site. But on the other hand, the hands are tied because, as you said, people just prefer to go to these huge marketplaces to shop to find all the goods. Mm-hmm. So that's the tension they're facing. Yeah. So the result here is that what's the best course of action under these circumstances, right? Like, if this is how it works, and that's the fundamentals, and you know, what's there someone to do that has a website that wants to attract people and kind of get more visibility at less cost? Mm-hmm.
I know that. I know that a lot of, it'll be all over the gamut, and I'd be curious to know what your perspective is, because based on what you do and being in now the motorcycle industry, so to a certain degree, it's not like you work in the industry, but you definitely have a product that that is aimed at this audience. I'd be curious to know, you know, how you feel like when you look, are the majority of dealers doing a bang up job on this? Are they doing great or not so much? Are they relying on, you know, Craigslist or Cycle Trader listings to pull people over to them? You see, can you tell, or have you done enough searching?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'll disappoint you in the sense that I have seen all of the above. And to be honest, the right answer, it is to use to do all of the above, because no one knows. There's no certainty in this kind of, you know, profession or this world, the online world. Me or anybody else, if anybody tells you, oh, that's how it's done and that's how the solution is, like, don't, that's the first sign, red flag. Don't believe them. People can give you advice and they can tell you, give you information, but what specifically will work and what you should do, that's not like a certainty, right? But you should just try a lot of different things that are best practices, and then you will arrive at a result.
Okay.
If someone knew how to do it, then they would be billionaires, right? They would be like, they wouldn't tell anybody. So I see a lot of dealers ranging from the complete, like, we don't go to any of these marketplaces, we don't touch them, we don't want to be there at all, and to all the way to people saying, yeah, we want to be in all of them, like in everywhere we can. And frankly, I have noticed that the correlation between who does that and who doesn't, it's a lot to do with size. Not always, but the bigger operations and maybe chains or bigger dealerships, they have, I think, figured that this is the game and you have to play. So you might as well play it well instead of, like, you know, going to the corner. So I talk to some of our, like, partners and customers sometimes, and they're like, yeah, oh yeah, we go everywhere. Like, we don't, where can we list, basically? And that's a good strategy. I think that's number one, right? You don't want any particular outlet to have a monopoly. Sometimes dealers say, oh, we don't like Cycle Trader, or we don't want to be on Craigslist. We won't pay any of these fees to go on this site. We'll just be on Google. And what they don't understand is that one day you are on Google and you're paying Google. That is, there is no escaping it, so to speak, right? People will not turn open the phone and, you know, when they want to buy it and go to your website, remembering it by heart. They can't do that. They have to find you some way. So you are in the game. That's the key kind of insight. So it's where you engage with this. It's not like whether you are advertising online or not.
Well, I was used when I worked, working for, I won't keep mentioning their name. When I worked for a big motorcycle marketplace platform, I'd have, at least my argument was always, well, you got a lead, and the guy might say, oh yeah, I'm looking through the leads, but this guy was already a customer of mine. This guy was already a customer of mine. They might look through and see that the leads that they had attained. And I would say, but remember, obviously they're your customer, and you might believe you have a great relationship with them, but they got back in touch with you again through the platform that I represent. In other words, what you pay me to do. So, like you're saying, consumer activity and where they're going and how they're coming back in to be connected with and be interacted with is different every time. So, like you're saying, to make sure you're in as many places as possible.
Of course. And also, it goes the other way, which is a little bit sounds negative, but it is that if you are not there, then that your customer that you already have might also find another outlet for what they're buying. Mm-hmm. I've been many times online to marketplaces, including our own, of course, and I have discovered dealerships that I didn't know existed and sold a particular vehicle that I would be interested in. And I wouldn't know about them because they're not in my town. They're like 5-10 miles away. I mean, the Bay Area is very densely populated. So within a 20-mile radius, there's like 50 dealerships. I don't know. So that's the opportunity cost there, is that they thought that they won't come to you anyway, but they might find someone else that also carries similar inventory or things that they want. And so it sounds a little bit like, oh, so then I have to be there in order to not send my customer somewhere else. And it goes back to the first principle I said, which is like, that is the game. Like the game online is that everything is visible. The whole world is your oyster. It's all in front of you. So you have to participate in that as a seller, as a retailer, rather than avoid it. Because of the two kind of major reasons we just explained. Yeah. You know, your dealer who said to you that's absolutely correct. That has been established. It's called the bias phenomenon. And eBay ran a survey a couple of years ago, and basically they proposed that the online advertising meant nothing. That was completely ineffective because people would have gone to eBay anyway. And at some point they cut hundreds of millions of advertising. They just stopped it. And they basically concluded there was no noticeable effect on the traffic. So the point there, though, is eBay is eBay. Like, that's exactly the point. When I started telling this story, I didn't have to explain to you who eBay was, right?
Right.
But your dealership website is not eBay. So people would not necessarily know it by heart. So that bias phenomenon doesn't apply to those kinds of companies, to small retailers or like regional retailers. It applies to bigger companies that have tremendous brand awareness and would, yeah, that wouldn't make an effect. But I thoroughly recommend, and if you have the guts and you want to try, yes, go stop it for a couple of months and then see your advertising and see what effect that has. And it's very difficult to judge, going back to what I was originally saying. Anybody who tells you they know the exact truth is lying to you, for sure. That's the only truth.
Well, there's a whole lot of what, I don't know. I know it's a term that's going back out of relevancy, and I'm sure the kids don't say it anymore, just an old timer like me. The idea of the FOMO is what they've called it for a few years, and just the fear of missing out is a basic psychological concept and totally a real thing,
yeah.
And that's, to be afraid that you're going to miss out and then doing the thing because you're like, well, I don't know any different. And having worked in the realm of selling, the digital advertising packages and participation basically in the marketplace through a big, behemoth that I was with, it was a matter of, do you not want to be here? I would always encourage guys, if they were having doubt, I would say, then do that. Unwind what you have going on, but measure it. If you're prepared to measure, and that's something maybe you could speak to, but I know I wouldn't be able to tell them other than just the basics, like, how many web referrals are you getting, on your Google Analytics, these other things, a dealer that's savvy could measure those things. But the majority of the time, when I would say that, they would say, no, I'm not willing to take that risk. They wouldn't want to take the risk and stop paying me the big money, because the company I worked for was definitely the highest priced version of a marketplace site. But yeah, you're right. If, measure it, get off it and measure it. If you're not sure, hit the reset button and start back over.
It's exactly right. And in terms of measurement, Brian, I would say if you're a dealer, approach your if you have a CRM software that where your leads come into, I think that's the key provider, that's a key vendor you have to ask to make sure that they give you some analytics of who sent you leads, right? So group them and know where they're coming from. That's the key. And then once you have that measurement in place, then you can run that experiment. And again, frankly, if you're not living day by day, and in these times, that's not the case. These are like, we're not in rich times, right? Then you will not lose long term. All these things are very ephemeral. People will come back. People will search for that motorcycle again in the spring and in the fall and in the summer. I was listening to a webinar today by your colleague Joe Ribaren, and he was saying, the average time it takes someone to buy a bike, it takes 6 months or something. So it's not such a short term thing. So I would say if you have the capability to measure it, establish that for first. And then if you do have the budget, it's interesting, right? You have the budget to cut something. Then if you can afford the test, basically, the FOMO, as you said, then just do it, see if it works or not, or how much it affects your business. But there's also other ways, right? Instead of doing that, I think that's the, you know, the negative, that's the negative experiment of like pulling back. And as we said, it's not about pulling back. It's just go and participate and find wherever else you can publish your inventory. That's, I think that's the key thing, is that don't hold it to yourself. Publishing it out is just like a benefit to you. And the only caveat there, the only thing, of course, is that wherever you publish it, has to link back to you. They have to send you back the users, right, and the traffic. So you there's a win-win. And remember when I said when Google looks at your website, it looks at how many links it has going into it. So that's the key here too, is that they will, once you start doing that, you will have more visibility in the eyes of the search engines and social networks than your competitors probably. And so that you win, not to mention that you just have more eyes on more websites out there where your inventory is. So as long as you control the distribution, go and, you know, promote that, like just push for that. There's many, many sites, do a search on Google, pick the top 50 that you find that are not dealer websites, and then see how you can get your content there and link back. I mean, it's amazing. This is one advice I have for dealers. I see a lot of dealers doing the opposite, like saying, oh, why is my content there or whatever? And it's amazing to me, because coming from this world, I get emails all day from people saying, can you put our content, our blog on your website or whatever, our blog post, so that people could see it and link to us. So it's a completely counterintuitive kind of reaction that I see. So I think that's the advice going the opposite way. Yeah. So which is play the game and publish and promote everywhere where you can, as much as possible. It's advertising, it's the internet, it's free advertising. Go out there.
And that a lot of times takes time, right? That approach, that's the old, like, I'm going to cook an actual potato versus I'm going to mix up those instant potatoes in the box, right? That might take a little bit of time, but well worth the time and energy in the long term.
Yeah. And to be honest, I have to say, not that much as you would think. As I said, there's not many sites where you would be able to go to and then, you know, approach them or whatever, ask to be published there. And then, you know, in the top 10, 20, 30 that you find, whatever. And then the results should come back pretty fast, right? Because the idea is those websites have traffic already. If you get back referrals, you should see that in your analytics. So that cycle will play out pretty fast. In terms of weeks, you should kind of run that experiment. So it's not a long-term strategy at all. It's just like go to, you know, to OfferUp and Oodle and all of the marketplaces out there that sell stuff, and then add your inventory if it's possible to do that. That's the idea.
Okay. So I mean, obviously a dealer could, just like any other business could, I know there's a lot, there's so many conversations about, well, I'm just going to invest, you know, my advertising and things in with Google directly. And there's a lot of that dealers would do. I mean, when I was calling on dealers, that was obviously one of the big competitors. They're talking, well, we spend this much on Google AdWords. We spend this much over here. We're sponsored this. We're, you know, it's a lot of like, well, that's where we all need to be. And then it's this war of like, you know, four area dealerships are all one after the other in the sponsored area, the ads area, basically,
exactly,
of Google search. And I'd always say, do you click those? I mean, visibility is definitely there.
Yeah.
It's up there high, but it's not a clickable link.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of times those who click it, people would use the term Google taxi, meaning like I used Google and it clicked me over there, but you wouldn't necessarily assign a lot of value to that lead. They clicked over to look at my hours. They were coming anyway, sort of thing. So I don't know if that's, you know, different these days, but.
That's exactly right. The bias plays a role. I mean, if you end up being there, you probably on a local search or something, and then you would have ended up to your website. I mean, it's true. And not to mention there is they bid each other up, as you said, right? This is an auction. So the more people want to be there, the more expensive it will be for everybody.
Okay.
So Yeah, the advice there is again, I'm not saying I know what you should or you shouldn't do, but test that, exactly, test that hypothesis. How useful is that? But most importantly, going back to the same point I was drilling earlier, is that you don't want to make any one of them a monopoly for how you get your customers. Mm-hmm. Because the more power any one of these platforms, Google, whatever, Facebook, have, the more they will be able to tax you, the more will be able to make you pay for traffic, right? So by distributing your inventory everywhere online, you remove, you reduce the any monopoly power that these platforms have over you. You diffuse that. So again, do both things, both distribute everywhere you can for free and also choose where you want to allocate your budget for actually promoting advertising in the biggest ones where you need to be.
Okay. So that's, yeah, hedging your bet, you know, I guess.
That's right.
Totally get that.
Exactly, yeah.
So
that's it.
I was just going to say, I don't know if, and maybe this is where you're headed, you know, what are the things, what are some actual, like the dealer could listen to this today and then go, and this is the list, a few things that they should actually do right away.
Yeah, so we talked about how to, you know, seek places to distribute your inventory and, you know, try to establish these relationships, that's for sure. But, you know, as we said, also the quality of your website, right? So matters. Most dealers I you know, work with have vendors that build their websites. We all know them, DealerSpike, Inspire, REI, DX1, all these vendors. And so I think if I was a customer, I would be asking them to provide me with some sort of an SEO, as we say. SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. So some sort of an SEO audit results of our own website. And these audits are kind of more impartial, right? So they cannot be doctored. So they will tell you how well you're doing in various aspects of the quality of your website. And then the additional thing that dealers can do today, and that's actually kind of fun, and you can do it immediately right now. Google has started giving a lot of emphasis on the performance of your website, especially on mobile phones. And they call this project, if you will, Web Vitals. So if you Google online, my Web Vitals score, or my website performance score, you will end up in one of their tools where you can enter a link, a URL from your website, like your inventory page or a DDP, a listing page, and Google will tell you how fast your website is according to them, like how do they see it. It will actually give you a score and it will color it in there. And that's like a way to get an idea immediately, and then you can take that score, and then if it's too low, if it's, you know, below the, you know, 60, 70s, actually below 70, then you should probably, you know, escalate that and say, you know, ask your provider what's up. And then
I was just going to say, did you say web vital, like your vitals, like checking your pulse, that sort of
thing? Exactly. They call that a whole thing, web vital. Yeah.
Okay, so if they go to Google and Google web vital, they'll see what it is and they can test their.
Yeah. Let me see how you would. It's Google's own site. Yeah, if you say Web Vital Score or whatever, there will be, you get a lot of ads from people trying to improve that. But maybe Brian, we can put some sort of a link. I can find a link and we can put it on the description of the.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's,
that'll be easier to find.
And like I say, the actionable pieces I really like. So, and I don't know if that's the end of the point on that one or if you have more on that, but I know you had.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's your speed, right? Your performance. And the more, by the way, the more like widgets and, you know, people approach you, say, can you put that on your website and we'll measure you that, or we'll make all your pages, you know, blink or whatever. You know, it doesn't matter. Like that stuff costs in terms of your performance. It just makes everything slower. It's even like loading up your motorcycle.
Hitchhikers? You mean putting hitchhikers on your website? Slowing it down.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I know. The guy with the crosses across, right? Yeah. And that one, yeah, that's a classic. And So all of that stuff, right? It's literally just putting stuff on your motorcycle. Like, I'll put this bug here and this equipment here and maybe get a fairing and this and windshield, and well, it's going to get heavier. So the same thing with your side. It's going to just like slow it down. And yeah, those reports that I told you earlier, I can paste the links of how to get them, will also advise you like what's causing your side to slow down. But these are stuff that your vendors definitely deal with. And so, you know, at the very least, you can just run the test, get a score, and then take it to your vendor and say, or say, congratulations, thank you so much. My side is very fast. Mm-hmm. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Oh, but if it's not, you can definitely raise that.
Yep.
Speaking about your side and your VDP, the thing that I see sometimes, and this is just a thing, it's not going to increase your visibility so much, but it will increase your conversion rate, which is like how many people end up leading your lead, is that you have to give people a very clear call to action, like one call to action. So the question is, what do you want a shopper to do once they land on this page? It cannot be 10 things. So often I see 10 links there, get a quote, contact us, talk to us, here's a via chat, by email, this and that, get financing information, get insurance, schedule a test drive, and you're like, what's next? I don't know. What's next?
You know what's funny about that is, as you read them, it sounds like a lot, and I know that that's what a lot of dealers do, and you're right, it's way too much. The call to action is, do something. We're not sure what. Maybe you can figure it out. You know, maybe you can click one of these things. But
it's kind of fear. Like, it's like, we don't know what you want to do, so we're going to give you all the options. Have all the options, right? But they, you know what they want to do. They only want to do one thing. They want to buy a bike. That's what they want to do, and they're on your website. So get rid of all that stuff. I think that's a pretty confident advice. Like, put a form out there. Just, you know, next, and some providers do that, some vendor, website vendors, that's how it is. Like, you just enter your name and your email and we'll get in touch, right? We'll talk about insurance and financing and all of that stuff. But just let's get the conversation going. That's what you want. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want too.
Yep. Let's move forward. Let's move forward now and where we can better serve you and answer the myriad of questions and concerns.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Another thing that comes to mind now, talking about your inventory and what's in there, and I think that's also actionable advice these days. So if you're selling new vehicles, like if you're a representative of a particular OEM, you carry that line, make sure your brochure, the full catalog of that line, is available on your website, under your roof, your digital roof. So you basically down to the VDP, there should be a VDP for every bottle you sell, even if it's not on your inventory, it should just be advertised as such, right? And the reason for that is that, well, that increases what we call coverage, keyword coverage. If you don't do that, online, like search engines in particular, do not know if you are selling that bike, but you are. You carry that bike, you don't have it in your inventory, but someone can order it for you. You can order it for somebody, right? And guess what? There's no inventory now. Anyway, no one is carrying that bike that the user wants, the shopper wants, right?
Everybody's
if you go somewhere and try to...
Everybody's on a level playing field.
Absolutely. So you have a Honda dealership, and, you know, everybody wants to get a Trail 125 or whatever. No one has that. The moment they appear, they get out immediately, right? So... But not having that page about it on your site because you don't have it on inventory, you're losing out. People want to ask you also if you're going to get it. The other dealer that gets that lead or that gets that page view from Google is because they have that page. They don't even have the bike. They don't have it on inventory, right? They will order it for you. That's what they mean. So you should definitely do that because you represent, you carry that line, and you can order that bike. And if you have... you know, money in hand, the customer waiting, you might even have a better chance with the OEM to give you that inventory. So make sure you do that. And I would again ask and go to my website vendor and ask them to do that for me, because they should probably offer that service automatically. They should just like, for any dealership, they should just like, yeah, here's your whole catalog under your website. And and go. We know websites that do it here in San Francisco, for example, our friend Scuderia. They do that for new inventory. They don't even advertise their inventory anymore. They, even though they have new inventory, they will just put the whole catalog out there because they're like, yeah, we'll sell all of them.
So they put everything that they have access to, right, on their website.
Exactly.
If it's being called a brochure or whatever, catalog or whatever it is.
Catalog, yeah.
That's maybe different from what they're saying is their active inventory today. Sometimes I think certain sites, I feel like when I'd looked at them, have those differentiated on their website. Like you have to either click into in-stock inventory or view our entire line or whatever sort of thing, and it'll bring you to a catalog. Yeah. So that catalog, even though it's maybe not showing as in-stock inventory, will still give them an increased footprint and ability to be found in search for that product that they then can attempt to get for them, right, and build that.
Exactly. 100% correct. Yes, they should keep it separate. That's the honest thing to do, right? You don't have it in inventory, right, but you do sell that vehicle, and you will then increase your visibility on the search engine.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point because, you know, when you're sitting at the dealership level, you have to figure out what goes where, what gets seen. Because then you've got to deal with the inbound customers. And did I meet the mark on their expectations? Do they think it's here? Was it clear enough that it wasn't here? And I know I've worked with enough dealers to know that sometimes they take the path of least resistance, which is to, you know, put everything up. They might manually load a unit that is not in their inventory that would have been loaded automatically otherwise. They manually load it. They don't indicate that it's not there. They just don't put a real photo of it or something. You know? And then it's such a bad, you know, it starts with them behind the sort of the eight ball or whatever, you know, in the conversation, because the perception is different than the reality. And that's definitely not a place they want to be. So.
No, for sure. Exactly. So that's why you shouldn't mislead your shoppers, right? And your users thinking that it's from your inventory. That's why there's an entirely separately crafted area on your website, yep, called brochure, as you said, or catalog. And that's where that is. And it's like, your order is to us now, right? Your inventory should probably list things that you have available right now.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's not very, it's a bad initial.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about something that you covered, and I'm trying to remember what it's called specifically, but I guess widgets, right? So I think it's probably real common to do different widgets. And I know there's companies that's what they do. They make a widget and they install it on a dealer's website. In a lot of cases, I think those things are probably used because it's a convenience thing. Like, you know, you scroll and it's following you up and down the website. Like it's everywhere on the website. It's highly visible. I think a lot of times dealers have told me they like those because it helps them determine once somebody's on their site, they're interacting with the widget thing, and then measure if they go all the way down sort of the funnel, if you will, and become, you know, a lead. And then they can say, oh, this came through this, the whatever, value my trade, or name all the different things. There's a lot of things that do that. To install that widget, am I thinking of that right? It would typically not benefit, you know, the actual site performance. It would be just a tool to maybe measure the lead or those sort of things, which dealers have other options for, but it would be potentially like, what do they call it? What are those things that get on the fish? They like lay on top of the fish and they're right around with the fish. What is that called?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So there's a,
it's true. It's,
what's that?
Indeed. No, I was going to say, I mean, it depends, Brian, right? I mean, if you have a link that says value by trade, if it's just a lead, it depends on the actual implementation of that thing, as we call it. Like, if it's just a link that says value by trade, that link by itself does not inhibit the performance of the website. And that's okay. What it does do, though, is it diffuses the attention of the user. So now, again, as we go back, we're like, well, what do you want me to do? Value my trade or get in touch with you? So that's where, how I think we should look at it. Now, if it also is a flying thing, following the user around and popping up messages or whatever, or chats or all of that stuff, then also it slows down the site. The way I like to think about it is like this. Your website is your store online, right? Would you do that in your physical store? If someone came to you and said, oh, we're going to put a kiosk up here in the front, and value your trade with our company XYZ Inc. and talk to your customers that come in. Would you do that? That sounds right. Well, of course. I mean, we want our customers to walk in the store to talk to us first, right? And we'll talk to them about everything else. Exactly. So I think that's a good way to think about it. It's like your customer came to your store, you talk to them, you establish that relationship, and then yes, you can encourage them to value their trade or fill up this financing form or whatever. But you should be in control of your online store in the same way that you wouldn't want random companies around in your actual store promoting, representing themselves and not you.
Anybody who's in your cards for my own service that I have going on. Hey,
of course. Exactly. And then writing down the name of the customer and the email address and putting it in their own database and sharing it with their customer, the other dealers or their friends. Like, what? No. So which a lot of them do, right? So the moment you put something into your, in your website, it's those people have access to all your customers, to all your users that came to your website. I mean, from my perspective, working in the industry, it's astounding how someone would accept that. Like we in our own website, obviously we guard that very, very well. It's like impossible to get a widget or a beacon or all this stuff in. I mean, absolutely not. I mean, not in the card. Mm-hmm. It literally is like someone putting up their brand on your store. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, it's funny. I just remember lots of conversations like, oh, we want to use this chat provider. They have a widget. Will you install the widget on your page so we can get the widget that we use through your marketplace site? And I'd be like, I don't know. I don't think so. And I'd ask and they'd say, heck no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, they want. Yeah, of course. They should. Yeah, it's their customer. If he comes there, they came to their store. They thought so. We discussed how difficult it is to get those customers to come to your website. Now they're here. You shouldn't get them somebody else. Uh-huh. You shouldn't put someone else in the middle of that relationship. It's your customer.
I don't want to interrupt sort of your flow and how you're going forward, but I did have another question that I wondered if you know and would share if you feel like it's, when I was working and with dealers directly like that a lot, it was a lot of conversations. They would say like, well, how can I do this? How can I do that? And I would say, you need to be building your own, creating your own content, right? Don't rely on us, but create your own content. But that same content could be used through your website that would come to me as a marketplace provider, in the feed. And I would say you need to focus on things like, actual, don't just use the canned verbiage that comes from your website provider, put your own, additional information in there and use your own actual photos. And I don't know if that's something that you want to speak to, if a dealership using their own photos, other than the visual draw into unique content in that way, is there something in the world of sort of the Googles and those sort of things that would benefit them and it's worth their while?
Yes, absolutely. So that's an excellent question. I haven't even gone into the thing about that. So both for the customer and Google, it's better to use your own content, including photos and description of the vehicle. Okay. Why? Obviously, I think I don't need to tell dealers that how people buy motorcycles. They've been in this forever. It's almost the number one ask, right, from a user or a customer. Do you have more photos? So people will connect with the vehicle, what they're buying, through this photograph. They will go, uncover it, look at all the 40 of them, the dashboard, that and this. It really adds a lot. And if it's a particular one, even if it's a new one, the particular one in that shop, in that context, it will make a difference. How much? I can't tell you. Now, the same with the description, right? Especially if it's a new bike, then, what can you do, right? You're probably going to use some stock description. But if it's a used one, just adding one or two sentences about it that's particular to that vehicle will make a difference, because the users will just connect with that. They will feel it a much more well-rounded BDP, a rounded ad that they are more inclined to communicate further and contact you. Now, that's for the user. For Google and search engines, Yes, absolutely. I mean, for more than a decade now, and when I was working there, and that we could Google knows when something is stuck. So there are so many websites out there that all they do, they go scrape Wikipedia, for example, make another website, and it's another Wikipedia, right? Well, where do you ever see them? You only see Wikipedia when you look for whatever, right? Well, because Google knows where it came from, knows it's a copy. So when all 300 Honda or Yamaha dealerships have the same description that is in the Yamaha website for the Tenere or whatever, Google knows this is the same description. They've seen that text, elsewhere. They've seen it 300 times, and they know that it's stuck. So that content does not increase the chances of you ranking higher compared to someone else. You're basically even. Now, recently, and of course, obviously, later development, they do that for, I think they can do that for photos too. So stock photography also is recognized by them as being something that is not original, it's not authentic content. And it is downgraded in terms of utility. They wouldn't penalize anybody for it. Actually, I did hear that exact question. Google has its own like webmasters sessions. And I go there all the time. It's very fun to hear if you're big to listen to. And I think that question about repeating stock descriptions or whatever penalizes websites. And they said it doesn't penalize them, but it doesn't help them either. So yes, authentic content is beneficial both for ranking well in Google and for establishing rapport with your users.
Okay. That's it's good to hear that. That's what I was taught, but obviously I didn't work with anybody that worked at Google who was, as knowledgeable as you are in those areas. As you begin talking about that more, it brings up more questions of things that I presumed would be helpful, but I don't know. And I want to ask you another one. And obviously we didn't talk about this. So if you're like, I don't know. But so let's say a dealer, is on their own website, and they've got, a bunch of stock photos, we would say, hey, take your own photos that will bring you from the world of average sort of in that component of it to potentially higher than average at some level in how Google views them as the expert in the market or them, most relevant or whatever the right word is. But if the dealer does that, let's say the dealer, uploads 10 photos of each motorcycle, and they've got a system in place where they can go in when they've loaded photos onto their computer to upload to their website. If they go in and rename the photo in something that would include, I don't think tags is the right word to use, but if they name it with things relevant to them, will that drive their results better to help them be found in more places on Google for that sort of content? Will that help them to do that and name it with, specific things that are, the area, the brand, the name of the dealership.
Oh, I see. The name of the file, you mean the name of the photo?
Yeah.
Yeah, so kind of. I kind of see where you're getting with that. And so in a way, the name itself, I don't think it will be preserved by your vendor, right? So your vendor will take your photos from whatever your dealer management system is or when you upload them, and they will probably upload them to their own, as we call them, edge servers. These are basically servers that are very close to people's houses, and they serve photographs and images very fast. They're very fast, and they will give that photograph probably an arcane name that's a code. That doesn't mean anything. It's meaningless. But so that information might be lost, but their software might have the ability for you to specify what is called ALT, alternative text or description for the photo. So you have to ask your vendor, if you fill that in, will that get on your website? And if it does, then yes, Google will see that positively.
Okay. Just something that would make you go from average, what everybody else is doing, the bare minimum sort of thing, to somehow in an advantage and a role. Okay.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you got the game right. It's like everybody's at 60%, right? At 70%, and every single thing of these little things will give you a 1% nudge, kind of. That's how it is.
And I have to imagine these are all, all these little details that you've kind of pointed out. are definitely things where some of the most savvy dealerships are doing them. So they're probably not ever glad to hear, you know, sharing with the masses, yeah. So everybody can get a little bit of an advantage because it takes away from that edge they have. But as you and I discussed before, for the greater good, I you know, it's the old the ships all, you know, are higher by the ocean or the tide, you know, and they're all going to rise. So
that's right. Yes, exactly. That's right. Most of the bigger chains do that. I mean, I think what differentiates them a lot, and especially it's not just the size. The successful from the more struggling is that they have a very disciplined process of how they post all of their inventory online and advertise it and manage its pricing. And like that process is very disciplined. It's not very loose up to whatever you ate that day or if you're bored. And that yields those extra 1-3% that will get you on top of the competition, right? They will all post so many photos of the used bikes, descriptions, as you said, whatever. So that process is what makes a difference.
Okay. And then you and I also talked about, and maybe it's part of what else you'd want to share, but we also talked before about the Google My Business side of things.
Yes.
And that really there's probably a whole lot of dealers that haven't really done their due diligence there. And it, you know, that could be a afternoon project to get that dialed in, at least get on the map with that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, of course. So Google My Business is a project by Google started a few years ago to basically highlight a particular bricks and mortar store that you own on their search results. So if a person is looking for your store by name, so they come to San Francisco and say SF Motor, for example, a local Honda dealer, then they will, you know, kind of put up a panel, like a little presentation on their page with photos from that store and reviews and all sorts of links and opening hours for the store. And that's for any business, like obviously the dealerships, but also restaurants, cafes is a classic example. So that's important to do and also fairly straightforward. Just go to Google, say Google My Business, and they will guide you through the whole thing. They will ask you questions and they will set up your presence there. And then the good thing about it is, of course, that you have a much more prominent placement in the real estate of that search page. You appear much more credible to your users, to shoppers who look for you. Then you also have the opportunity to communicate more through photos or maybe reviews or actually directly. I think you can just post to that area, like offers or coming up, like a party that's coming up or whatever. And you can advertise there. So it's definitely something you should set up. It's very easy. As you said, it will take you very, very little time. And then, and of course, you should pay very close attention, though, after that on an ongoing basis to the reviews that are posted there. So if customers leave reviews there and if these reviews might be negative, you are given always the opportunity to respond to them. So responding to them is of great benefit. And of course, hopefully, most of your customers will read, you know, good reviews, so you won't have to even respond. But yeah, definitely that's a great placement and something that's easy to do, and you should take advantage of it. So Google My Business is the name of the product, and I think it's free to participate. It's no fee.
I've heard, you know, it's been quite a while. Maybe you said a couple of few years ago or whenever that came out, but I had heard maybe it was a year or 2 years ago in the automotive space. I was listening to some guys over there, and they tend to be, you know, maybe I don't want to say further advanced than motorcycles, but they think they've, you know, they've got some bigger budgets and a better level of understanding as a sort of a basic, you know, at the basic level, they have a better understanding of digital, I think. And I remember hearing them talk about how a dealer had claimed another dealer's Google My Business. So when you'd go to the, you know, the map and you go to click on the dealer knowing, oh, this is where I want to be. And you'd click it, bam, you might be looking at a dealer that isn't the right dealer. So, you know, I don't know. They've probably cleaned that up by now. It's probably not as easy to do that. And I only think about all that from experience because, you know, with me with having a real estate business now out here in Oregon, I went in and set this up, you know, not too long ago. And you have to go through and verify who you are, and it asks for address. Well, for me, I work for a brokerage that's, you know, I don't know, 10 minutes away from my house, but that's the address that I'm affiliated with on my Google My Business. And it sent me, you know, basically a little packet that I have to get and verify who I am and that I'm affiliated with that address, first of all. But it also comes with like a window sticker that says, review us on Google. So, you know, obviously that call to action for somebody who's physically there on the ground at your dealership, and then the reminder that you want them to come back around and connect everybody to them in a positive way with your reviews on the web.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's 100% right. And I'm very surprised to hear your story about someone claiming someone else's. That's a verification snafu that I wouldn't be imagining I'm very proud of. It's a serious issue. But I wouldn't think you could do it today easily. That's like a hack.
Yeah, but it was a couple of years ago, I know, at least. So maybe, like I say, now having done it, I don't know how that would happen. They would have sent a postcard or something to the location to verify it
right
now. At least that's how they do it. But nevertheless, you know, have you been, you know, out and stumbling around and looking at the different dealers' presence and see plenty of dealers who aren't even doing the Google My Business page?
You know, I've seen some. I don't have good stats for you. I've seen a lot that do. I live in a tech rich area, you know, people here have the. And also, Brian, there's also one other thing to note here. Just having that panel there doesn't mean that the store or that the management has claimed it.
Good point.
So, as I said, Google has the knowledge graph with where it puts all of this information in, and I know that firsthand. So we would trigger, as we call it in the word, we would trigger that panel if we were confident enough, we have information about the store, even if the store never knew about it. So if we know there, you know, there's a very distinct dealership name, Monroe Motors, for example, right? It's indistinguishable. Mm-hmm. And there's no disambiguation to be done. That's unambiguous. So if you are in SF and you're looking for Monroe Motors, it's, you know, we have 100% hit. So we will trigger that panel, even if the management of that store never claims that Google My Business. Mm-hmm. It's just some search results. So what we're saying here is that, well, it's there, so you might as well go take advantage of it and then use it for your messaging and communicate your hours and, you know, whatever else, events and photographs, whatever you want. It's an opportunity.
And if a dealer doesn't claim it, for the examples that we're talking about, because we know that there are some out there, if you're a dealer and you're not in, you know, in the heart of tech, you know, and maybe the dealer's like, that's the last thing I ever think about, and they haven't done it. If somebody goes on there and leaves them a review, I assume they could, if they're in that position on the Google search page, somebody could probably still leave them a review, but then the dealer wouldn't be aware of it, probably couldn't act on it, right? So they would be at a complete disadvantage for having not done that due diligence, right?
Of course, yes, exactly. There's a negative aspect to it if you omit to do it. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, you've certainly shared a lot of little, you know, bullet points, if you will, to me, but I know that each and every one of those are something that's an actionable piece for the dealer network that listens to this. So I appreciate you doing that. I do want to, and I know that you don't want to make this about you and your company, but I would love for you to share a little bit about Moto Hunt and, you know, who's Moto Hunt, right? There's going to be dealers who listen to this who may not know who it is, and now they do. But if you could share a little bit about Moto Hunt and what you're doing over there, just so everybody knows who you are and if they're looking for a solution like that.
Yeah, of course. So as I said earlier, you know, when I left Google, I wanted to do kind of a passion project, and that's what Moto Hunt was. I really always liked marketplaces and like creating websites where people can find things. So I thought that's up my alley, and I created Moto Hunt, which is a, you know, free to participate marketplace for power sports. And again, having my background, my idea was I will just do exactly what the search engines do. I will call the web, find listings, and then refer all my users back to those retailers. And that's what Moto Hunt is. So from our perspective, our goal is to, you know, basically build something really, really nice for the motorcycling community where they can go and safely find things and have a, like all the inventories there. So availability and inventories are primary goals, not profit is not the main kind of optimizer. And in order for us to do that, we also kind of give all of this traffic back to the sellers, to dealers in this case, also leads and everything that comes to us is free for them. And so we create basically a Google just for motorcycles. And our thinking is that, well, if you're going to play in this world and you're a retailer, like a dealer, you might as well partner with someone that's on your side. And if you make that a success, then everybody wins. So we consider dealers to be verified sellers. They are. It's actually funny, right? I mean, in Craigslist, remember, it was free for all. And then at some point, Craigslist added a fee.
Right.
Even to users. And why did they do that? Well, they added the fee for users to prevent scams, to protect users, right, from people who just posted there. And what does that tell you? That tells you that private individuals who go to sell things online, yes, unfortunately, they have to be verified, but the dealers don't have to. That's the point. They are verified sellers. We know where your store is. You're not going to pick up, you know, pack up and go after you sell me this bike. So what I think it was the opposite. Like, the dealers don't have to pay because, yeah, that's where they are. And then as far as the community itself, the riders, we wanted to build something that helps beginner, especially riders, find the vehicle that's appropriate for them. So it was less about, you know, I've been reading for 20 years and I know what I want and where is that available. But it's more about, I'm a beginner, I like cruisers, what should I buy? So we kind of build a lot of functionality around that. And so that's what our aim for the site is, to become a place where there's increased availability, there's a marketplace that's friendly to buyers and the sellers, lowers the cost and barrier to entry, and evens out the playing field, you know, with all the big mega marketplaces out there. And of course, we also build great tech. We come from a tech industry, and we have also premium stuff, like pricing technology that the automobile industry, the automobile retailers have had for a decade. So we're bringing that to the power sports world as well, and that's premium services. So, yeah, this is the site, and we have a lot of information there for how you can use it and benefit from it. And I hope we see you, we hear from you.
Well, yeah, hopefully, you know, I mean, I sometimes get, I'll have a guest on here and I'll have some people that I know or even some that I don't will reach out when I put those posts out or the episodes live or some social media avenues that I have for the podcast on, and I'll get questions about the guest or whatever, like, oh, I didn't know them and I didn't know they did this or whatever. So obviously if I get any of that, I'll make sure to direct them to you, but I'll put some links and some contact info in the actual post. So anybody that has questions can reach out to you directly, you know, go to the site or whatever and check it out. But I know that, you know, for you, it was primarily, you know, you and I've had a few conversations similar to this, just talking about the industry. And it's really nice because it's a creative piece, you know, where somebody's trying to not worry about the end result, not worry about the money, but instead go forward with how do we build something that's helpful? How do we build something that does what the consumers want? How do we do something that can be helpful to dealers? And I really appreciate that because, you know, as I started out with saying today, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I just want to make sure I continue to share as best time will allow. Hopefully, like once a month, I can do some sort of an episode and share something, you know, with like, a guy of your stature and your background. Sharing some of those insights is huge for my audience. So I want to say thanks for you coming on.
Yeah, I hope you come back with that series. It's been a long, you know, how many months now? Has it been a year where it's been away, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I looked and it was like, I don't know, it was like right at New Year's or right before New Year's of 20. Right. And then, you know, I was off to the races getting my real estate license and working a job full time and had some family stuff and you name it. And I kept thinking I should do a little catch up show for everybody. And it just never got there. And of course, my little podcast board here, all bright and shiny, but it was under a bunch of other books and things. And I kept thinking, I got to dig that out and dust it off. And I just never quite got there. But, you know, thankfully, between the conversations you and I had sidebar here and more recently, I was like, man, I'd love for you to come on. And thankfully you're willing to come on and do this. So I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here. I'd talk about these things forever, Brian, and I'm so happy that you offered me this forum.
Yeah, well,
I love talking about that stuff.
I would leave a standing invitation to somebody, obviously, that's as sharp as you are in that realm. If more things come up that you want to say, hey, here's something that I see dealers are doing, and here's where they should change and do this other thing. If it's sort of morsels like that, they are all about it, obviously, that sort of information. So, yeah, you reach out to me if you get more of that sort of stuff. I'd be glad to have you jump back on and do another one.
Absolutely. I'll forward all the info I can get get. And we should post all these useful links on the description of the podcast so that people can access them.
Totally.
And then try these things out.
Yep, totally. Okay, thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Brian. Bye.